I am greeted by the smell of fresh spray paint as I enter a room of people. Some are students and some not, but they all share one thing in common. They're here supporting the Fight for 15, an international movement to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. The event is hosted by a Massachusetts-based coalition called Wage Action. Today, students will prepare for an upcoming rally in Boston. Moving further inside, the smell of paint becomes stronger, and faint music can be heard coming from another room. A student carving out paper stencils that say Fight for 15 catches my attention. The table he is seated at is entirely covered by stencils and colorful cans of spray paint. Next to him sits a large cardboard box full of blank t-shirts. On the floor, students are designing posters. Their statements read, "We are more, share the wealth," and the Fight for 15 salutes hardworking parents. While students are busy designing posters and t-shirts for Boston's Fight for 15 March, Shauna, a spoken word artist, prepares to perform a piece about minimum wage. It's a topic she's never spoken about before. But Shauna is confident that spoken word can play its own role in influencing movements like the Fight for 15.
For years back, civil activism, justice, poetry, they've all gone the same way. So if you have the platform to speak to people, then whatever means you use to do that, you should use to do that. Ours is poetry.
She says $15 an hour is a reasonable amount of money for the work people do.
Everybody's not going to be able to make it on $8 or $9. You're not talking children, you're talking adults. I couldn't make it on $8 or $9. So I can't anticipate that somebody with a family and a house payment or a car payment and children and diapers, you know, whatever it is people have.
And this message about the inherent inequality of an $8 or $9 minimum wage is the primary message in Shauna's performance.
So again, I'm balancing between eating and sleeping and feeding the kids and feeding me and feeding her and paying the bills and damn, I gotta go to work again.
Rahsaan Matra, who is taking time out of school to pursue music, was also asked by organizers to be here today. He was asked to lead a chanting workshop. Matra was unfamiliar with the Fight for 15 campaign prior to this event. He says once he became aware of the movement, his support for it came naturally.
A lot of parents are willing to sacrifice their own meal so that their child can eat. Because they're working a minimum wage job, they're not able to afford their housing. They have to make choices between food and bills. They have to make choices between, you know, buying supplies for your children or feeding yourself.
Matra understands why people work minimum wage jobs. However, he says in his eyes, minimum wage should be the minimum it takes for people to properly live in their environments.
If you can only stand 5 feet tall and the pool is 6 feet high, but you can't swim, you should be provided with something so that you become 6 feet. You at least meet the level.
Currently, around 30 U.S. states have a higher minimum wage than the federal government's $7.25 an hour. Seattle and San Francisco have passed laws to raise their minimum wage to $15 an hour by 2018, and many economists are surprised by this. Dr. David Newmark, professor of economics and director of the Center for Economics and Public Policy at the University of California, Irvine, says the $15 minimum wage is an anomaly, and he doesn't think we will be seeing a $15 minimum wage at state level anytime soon.
The $15 thing sort of has come out of the fast food protest. It hasn't really come out of policy, except in a few rather unusual places, as someone who lives in San Francisco can attest to.
While Newmark recognizes that an increase would provide to low-wage workers, he says there's another side of the story. He says it's owners of small businesses who would be hurt, and badly.
If you're a small business that relies on low-skilled labor, and that neither means you're rich nor that you're evil, it just means that you're in an industry that uses low-skilled labor, and your labor costs are a big share of your cost, you know, this can significantly eat into your profits and conceivably turn them negative, in which case you're not going to stay in business much longer.
Newmark explains another, more complicated issue out there, an issue he feels many have lost sight of. This is something economists call labor-labor substitution.
So suppose you're an employer where the minimum wage is $10 and now it goes to $15. One thing you're going to try to do is say, can I now find more productive workers who are actually worth the $15 I have to pay them? And you start looking for more skilled workers, and you can find them, of course, because at the higher minimum, some of them will choose to work. And the least skilled folks, the most disadvantaged folks, can be the ones who get displaced from their jobs.
He says while overall employment effects might not be major, the disadvantaged workers experience a great loss. He notes for places with high minimum wages, like Seattle and San Francisco, this is a very big concern. Dr. Jared Bernstein, senior fellow at the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities, says raising the minimum wage has its pros too. He points out that low-wage workers depend on the minimum wage for their livelihood, and he points to the obvious truth that, with an increase, these workers would make more money. He notes the average worker affected by a minimum wage increase is around 30 years old and works full-time.
Many are parents. Many actually have considerably higher levels of education than low-wage workers used to have in the past. So for many of these workers, it's really integral to their ability to make ends meet to be getting a decent hourly wage. And because of some inefficiencies in the low-wage labor market, wages there have been very stagnant now for many years.
Bernstein says the cons that come with raising the minimum wage are typically unintended consequences.
Opponents argue that if you raise the wage too high, the very workers it's trying to help would be priced out of the labor market. There's been a great deal of research on this question, and I would argue that the broad conclusion is that while you can certainly find some cases of these unintended disemployment effects, as they're called, folks who do get priced out of the job market, they're quite minimal when it comes to moderate increases in the minimum wage, and thus it's widely understood to be a policy that has its intended effect.
On Tuesday, thousands of activists marched demanding $15 an hour and the right to form a union for all low-wage workers. The organization running the protest estimates over 4,000 people participated in the march. Currently, Massachusetts' minimum wage is $9 an hour, but it will be raised to $11 by 2017. Some of the participants included fast food workers, retail workers, childcare workers, and adjunct professors. The Boston rally started near Northeastern University, where several students from colleges and universities around Boston showed support for their adjunct professors. Adjunct professors are part-time faculty members who in the U.S. receive on average around $3,000 per course. Most adjuncts do not receive health insurance or retirement benefits from their employers. Evan Jacobson is a sophomore at Northeastern and has been involved with the Fight for 15 movement for some time. Jacobson, a distinguished advocate for social justice at Northeastern, argues the university cares more about its profit than its faculty and workers.
The president of the university makes 117 times each hour what a service worker makes, and it's just a ridiculous disparity. And that's our main struggle, kind of the basis of all the other movements that we do. Sort of the details all stem from that.
At the march, Jacobson's efforts are geared towards standing up for his adjunct professors.
Basically, the adjunct professors, they contribute huge amounts to the university's value and have helped bring it to a top 100 and then a top 50 university. And I benefit so much from my education from them, and yet they don't benefit at all from their participation in the university. They do not get treated equally.
During the march, Northeastern students participate in a sit-in demanding improved adjunct professor working conditions.
There's about 30 students right now sitting in the president of the university's office over there. I'm asking to speak with the vice president of student affairs to basically bargain with them and demand that they change these adjunct conditions.
While students protest in the president's office, Jacobson and thousands more march from Northeastern to the Boston Common. They chant in unison while holding signs. While Jacobson's t-shirt supports adjuncts specifically, he is marching in support of all low-wage workers. Boston kicked off what organizers claim to be the largest protest for low-wage workers in U.S. history. The very next day, over 200 cities in America protested for a higher minimum wage. With some 60,000 people showing support for the movement, it doesn't seem like the Fight for 15 will stop anytime soon. For You Are Here, I'm Chloe Goldstein.
What? Now! What?